What is up? It's Dakota Layden here from Destination Fear, and you are listening to the Paranormal Zone.
A ghostly apparition in the dark of night.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
So, Patrick, I have a question for you. Are you there?
Is that your question?
No. It sounded like it, though, didn't it? Anyway, when you die, you know, we all die. Do you feel like you should be shrouded in something before, you know, putting put in your casket and your... Encased in like a linen sheet or something.
You know, it's funny that you asked, Mike, because in our multitude of recording attempts over the last few days, I seem to recall asking you a very similar question.
You did.
And now, so, being the brilliant podcasters that we are,
yes,
we are reversing what we had tried.
Yes.
In order to kind of set the podcast mojo off in the right direction.
Yeah, because you lost yours in the last few days.
195%.
Yeah.
And I have to clarify right away to those longtime listeners that still remain. Yes, I sound like I am living inside of about 12 garbage cans right now. But you know what? It's going to have to do. For this episode. This is a new experiment here. We're using my phone.
And I'm using my laptop.
You're using your laptop, and you sound great. I don't. But please, it's still going to be the same unbelievably entertaining,
eclectic,
high-quality podcast magic that all of our tens and tens of listeners have grown accustomed to.
Yeah.
So, Mike, when you brought up that question, I, of course, recalled asking you, and mm-hmm. I want to explain slowly my vision in my head.
Okay.
I actually wrote these down. I wanted to remember. Because I had asked you before if you had a preference of referring to them as winding sheets.
Oh, yes.
Your own personal linens. Your own cloak.
Cloak. Now that's a whole different thing.
Your own shroud.
Yes.
Do you have a preference for which term to use before I move on?
Well, shroud is the most accurate term, I would believe.
Most accurate term.
Yes.
Okay. It's definitely the most apropos term to the topic that we are attempting to dive into. You know, being that Easter is coming up, I started, the Catholic boy in me started to worry that perhaps literal gods, not podcasting gods, literal gods were shutting us down out of fear of how we were going to absolutely butcher the story of the Shroud of Turin.
I think we're
going to
do well.
I think so, too. I hope so, for sure. My fingers are crossed. My fingers are crossed. No pun intended by saying crossed right there. But
I would cross my toes, but they're, you know, my neuropathy keeps me from, you know, being able to really do much with them.
Were you actually able to cross your toes at one point?
No. Well, if I used it, my hand and fingers,
okay,
and did that.
If you manipulated them with your other digits.
And my psoriatic arthritis, it is making my toenails turn black and falling off.
Oh my God, too much information, my friend. But
I don't like to touch them very much. So,
so this and is Mary another vision.
Nightmares.
Besides the vision that I'm going to describe shortly, the listeners can also envision Mike not only in his sling, his scully, but now they can envision him sitting there being tormented by his black toes. My
toenails.
Goodness gracious. Toenails.
My toes are just kind of reddish.
Red toes with black toenails.
Yeah, they fall off.
Okay, moving on. Moving on. Mike's taking a drink from his ice cold Coke.
Coke Zero.
I got my bottle of Wawa over here. It is March 26th. It is Tuesday, approximately 3:26 in the p.m. Just changed over to 3:27. Yeah, we're recording fairly early, almost midweek. I have an opportunity. We've had a couple of snow days, some e-learning days at the school these past 2 days, and so I got my hours in already, and I have the afternoon free. So here we are. We're giving us a shot. Now, that vision that I have of you, Mike, wrapped in your own winding sheets. I'm going to use winding sheets.
Okay. That's a good terminology.
Do you think that generations down the road, someone, some expert, some group of explorers will come across some abandoned tomb in the near your humble abode, only to discover this baffling and mystifying visual of Mike enclosed, cloaked, wrapped in his winding sheets? All they can see is kind of like the outline shape of your glasses.
I'm not going to have coins on my eyes.
Maybe your white beard. Would your white beard show up through? Would some solar energy singe your an image of your white beard on your winding sheets?
But it might. It did it on might. on the shroud itself.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, that's a possibility. That's one of the many theories.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that down the road you can envision some television show diving into the mystery of the Shroud of Enderlin? I just want to know. I have this vision in my head.
North Dakota.
Yes. First and foremost, I think the odor would be pungent, no matter how far down the road. I'm kidding.
Well, if they open my encapsulated body, you know, with the casing, whatever, maybe it was airtight enough to where, you know, I'm so preserved that I'm actually still there. Or at least mummified.
I like the term preserved over mummified.
Yeah,
that made me giggle.
I guess it's the same thing.
Kind of a preserved carbonyl kid. Oh yep. Man.
I don't know.
Mike, it is good to see you. It's something to ponder for sure. Maybe future generations stumble across this frightening, I don't know, emblem of Enderlin, the Shroud of Enderlin. It is good to see you, though. Thank you for making this work. This is our fourth straight day trying to do this.
Yes, I believe it is.
And again, I apologize for the audio quality, but we need to get something out. And thank you, everybody, for waiting patiently. We will have one more episode with, I'm not going to say anything. Knock on wood, we plan on having one more flagship episode coming out in March before the big switcheroo to the new plan of two flagship episodes a month, and two Patreon episodes a month, two Patreon episodes at minimum a month. We're just hoping to kind of engage more listeners out there to check out some of our awesome quality, awesome content on the Patreon page while maintaining our own quality. Right? I mean, that's been a baffling mystery in itself, so we shall see. This
it
clip
will
right
always
now,
be...
Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry for...
No, I was just going to say it will always be a mystery.
It will always be a mystery. But my phone right now is recording both video and audio. We shall see. Maybe I'll share a portion of the video clip on the Patreon page.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. I don't know if this is high enough quality to put on YouTube, but maybe.
But it's good enough quality to put on our stuff.
I think so, for sure. Oh, 100%, 100%. Hey, was that a shot at our quality? Is that what you're saying?
I was just going to say that it just goes along with the quality of everything we've done.
Oh, excuse me for coughing, everybody. That was very, very loud. I apologize. But maybe it's meant to be, because I have just had an awful cough for going on a week now.
Yes.
That's just been wonderful. But
you got slammed twice in a row with that.
I know. It's like, what is going on here? But I suppose, Mike, moving onward and upward, in case you are new to the program, believe it or not, every now and then we do get new listeners from time to time. This is your weekly dose of all things paranormal, strange, and mysterious. Mike is struggling with his glasses right now.
Yes.
Apparently. It's okay. I'm distracted. Oh, man. Mike.
I'm trying. You should see me try to put my headphones on.
That's what I'm saying. So maybe I'll share the first 10 minutes of this on Patreon and stuff, just so people can see how seemingly, simple tasks like putting your glasses back on are a struggle for you. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I can't wait till your shoulder gets replaced, man. In all honesty.
May 1st.
Getting back to the all-important introductions. If you haven't figured it out, this is the Paranormal Zone. As I said already, your weekly dose of all things paranormal, strange, and mysterious. My name is Patrick Kopfberg, and I am joined, as always, you know him, you love him, the co-host with the ghost, the paranormal poster boy himself, the fastest sling in the West, Mr. Mike Carbno. Good to see you, buddy. Are you ready to talk some Shroud of Turin?
That's Shroud. Some Shroudish content.
Shroudish content, even.
Yes. Yes, it's an awesome subject matter. I just, doing some research, and I'm just coming up with some really cool stuff.
No, yeah, it's been a journey. Just looking into this, I think it's necessary to point out that, in case you haven't figured it out, we are not experts. We say that on nearly every. Yeah, we say that in basically every episode. It's almost like a disclaimer, right? It's like a disclaimer. We are not proclaiming anything as true. We're not proclaiming anything as false. We are just throwing out some interesting aspects from both sides. And we're letting the listeners make up their minds, obviously, as Mike and I always do. You and I have our own thoughts, our own opinions on this mystery. I mean, it's enduring. It's an enduring mystery, so that adds some weight to it right there itself.
Well, it's been a mystery, and it's been a controversy, and it's been studied and for centuries.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think we were going back and forth the other night about the fact that it is still debated to this day,
right,
in 2024, centuries upon centuries later. That kind of says something, doesn't it? I mean, it hasn't been definitively proven either way.
We use that
argument a lot with the Patterson film. We use that argument a lot. That's, I mean, they're totally different mysteries. We get that and stuff. And the Patterson film, I think it's safe to speak for you, Mike, that if we ever are close to proclaiming something as absolute truth, the Patterson film is one of those items for us, right? We just believe so wholeheartedly in the authenticity of that.
Absolutely.
But we still can't dismiss the possibility that it isn't real. You just can't. The Shroud of Turin, totally different level of mystery. Now, has this been something that has intrigued you, Mike,
for a long time.
Years and years? And if so, why?
It's intrigued me for centuries.
Centuries? You're that old?
Yeah. Well, I feel like it.
You don't look more than 3 centuries old.
Yeah, well, don't look a day over 2, I think. But,
oh, God.
But anyway... Yeah. It's a great story. I mean, if you're a religious type, you have faith in what this is. It's just awesome on that level of, religion and faith and spirituality and all of that.
Spirituality, I think, is the key word there.
Right, and mixed in with all the negative side of you know, the naysayers that say, no, it is fake. It's fake. It's been proven in the mid-century that it's fake.
Right.
You know, but, you know, just the whole controversy and the story itself is awesome.
Yeah, no, 100%. It is beyond intriguing to me. I mean, we always joke about my Catholic upbringing, right? You know,
yes,
stuff
it's
like
embedded
this,
in you deeply.
It's embedded in me. It is absolutely embedded in me.
It has been burned into your brain,
singed into my
singed.
Soul.
Yes, that's why your growth has been stunted. Sorry, that was a bad joke.
Well, hey. That it would my burial will then require less linen to to cover this minuscule vessel of mine.
get a fine Egyptian 8,000 count sheet to wrap yourself in. Just kind of lay it out flat on the ground, and you can do this. You have to do this before you die, because you lay on one end, kind of wrap it, and then you roll.
Then I roll, okay.
And it's kind of roll yourself up like you're rolling yourself up in a rug or something like that.
Now, do I, like, lay face down with, like, my hands at my sides and let someone else roll me?
Oh, there you go, yeah. It'll take some planning.
Take some practice.
Strategic planning, yes.
Okay.
Then they'll know how to do it when you do die.
Anyway. Yes, you know what? Something to look ahead to, right?
I myself am probably going to be cremated.
Yeah, you mentioned that before. So, well, maybe you'll have now are your cremated remains going to be like spread somewhere, or is Mary going to make like some sick macabre vessel to store your remains in?
I don't know. That's something I have to think about. I actually have a portion of my mom and dad's ashes that are mixed together here at home.
Right.
And it's in a beautiful wooden box, and I cherish that.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. You know, since I let that word macabre slip.
Said it right.
Forget. Yeah, we cannot forget, though, that's part of the new format, right, Mike? We got
exactly.
Some cool bits, however you want to call them, segments, and we cannot forget that. I got some more interesting tidbits on the macabre. I'm from Amity, from the macabre.
Macabre. Yeah.
And the yad.
It's a hard word for many people, I'm sure. We're probably being laughed at right now.
Yeah, more than likely. So we're going to dive into some of, you know, two of those bits. Also, we got some ghost gab coming up because Mike has a little update. Mary had an interesting experience not that long ago. I want to refer to that, chat about that. And then I have a question for you, Mike, regarding my recent visit to one Little Miss Debbie.
Yes.
Her final resting site. I have a question for you about that one as part of our
I really
gab.
Need to get there sometime.
Yeah, you do, man. I think it'd be, I don't want to say moving, but I think that it would be something special for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, yes, we have Ghost Gab and Haphazard Horror/Moments of the Macabre coming up. I'm going to be saying it like that all the time now. Got a Moments of the Macabre. Sorry, everybody. Sorry. I sound terrible enough as it is. I don't need to be adding my obnoxious attempts at accents on there either. Where the hell do we want to start, Mark? I just called you Mark.
How long have we been friends, you idiot? Jeez.
Okay, I have to
All
defend
right,
myself.
Stanley?
I have to defend myself a little bit, okay? My oldest brother, his name is Mark.
I'm not your brother.
I know you're not. Well, we're brothers from
yes,
another mother.
Exactly, but I am not your brother Mark.
But for reasons that I shall not share on air, my brother Mark was on my mind today, and so I guarantee you that's why it just popped in my brain.
Okay,
so
I understand, and I'm sorry that I called you an idiot this time.
No, you're not. You meant it. I could feel it coming out of you. You've been bottling up that energy. Oh, man.
Slapped you right in the forehead.
Maybe that should be shared or saved for a Patreon episode where Mike just goes off on me. He just yeah. says everything he's been holding back for years. Casper, Mr. Casper, yeah. there with your little name down in the corner. Casper. Well,
that was my nickname.
How do I appear on your end? Does it come up as Paranomaly Zone or Patrick or neither?
Paranomaly Zone.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Again, this is a new experiment, so hopefully we shall return to the usual routine for the next episodes. But hell, you never know. Listeners might enjoy this more. I don't know. I have no idea.
We shall.
I will say this.
Find out.
I will say this. It doesn't. This method does not require microphones or mixers or a multitude of cords or a recording software. It's a bit easier on my end. So.
But, yeah. It's just the same on my end. It just looks different.
Right. Well, Mike, we'll get into some.
Too much.
We'll get into some of the details. If you're listening to this episode and if you follow the podcast, chances are you are fairly familiar with what the Shroud of Turin is anyways, but we'll give you some brief background. The Shroud of Turin, as we've been mentioning it, is a well-known length of linen cloth that allegedly bears. I mean, it doesn't allegedly because you can see it.
It's like 16 feet long because it has the front and back.
Right.
It was laid down and then it was from the head to the feet, it was the top part came down.
Yes. A length of linen that bears a faint image on the front and back of a man believed to be Jesus Christ. It has been venerated for centuries, especially by members of the Catholic Church, as the actual burial shroud used to wrap the body of Jesus of Nazareth after his crucifixion. It's been debated upside down, left and right, in any number of ways. There have been proclamations made on both sides of the fence of belief. Some pretty strong arguments from both sides. My professional notes here, Mike, do you see these?
I do. Yes. You're scratching all over the paper.
And I'm using, unfortunately, photo paper because I couldn't find regular paper.
So is it like sliding around on your pen or what?
No, I'm being very careful with it. There's a couple smudge marks on there, but...
Well, isn't the back like regular paper?
No, both are the same.
Oh, yeah. Well, never mind then.
Yeah. It's not a glossy photo paper.
Okay, well, then you're good.
I'm good. Some of the possible explanations... This is, like we mentioned briefly, a singed, so to speak, solar image embedded onto this shroud. Is it perhaps legit DNA that has been left on there? Was it, in fact, a hoax? Was it painted? There have been several studies. I wouldn't say several, because it seems like, you know, a lot of these in-depth looks into the shroud have kind of slowed down over the years, over the last few decades, simply because they haven't been allowed to look at it. You know, it's kind of off limits. Is this actually divine in nature? I mean, is this truly supernatural? Is this the image of the Son of God? Or again, was it a hoax? Was it created after Jesus' lifetime? Man, there's so many different possibilities. Mike, before we dive into some of the deets, the facts, you know, do you have a gut feeling? Do you have a gut feeling about the shroud? Where do you sit?
Where do I sit? Boy, I want to believe it is true. It is real, factual. I want to, you know, see that proof of it being the actual shroud of Jesus Christ. And I don't know. It's
Did you get emotional there?
No, I didn't.
I thought you were. I thought you were like holding back like a tear or something.
No, I lost my train of thought.
Okay, on that too. All right.
Yeah, but anyway, you know, if you have faith in that it's real, you know, just stay with that because it could help a lot of people and give them a lot of comfort that this is a connection to. Actually, Jesus Christ, people that really believe that he was on earth and did what he did. But in fact, also, is it not meant to be found out as a real Jesus Christ shroud, and is it going to be like Bigfoot? And it's always going to be debated, and not known, and maybe it's not meant to be known for sure. So people have that. People have the. They can make their own decision. They have the free will to either believe it and have faith in it and grow strong from it, or you can be on the other side. And if you know that it's in your gut feeling that it's an artificial painted item made in the Middle Ages, that's fine for them too. You know, it's you have the choice. You know the. To make, and maybe it's always supposed to be that, so the faith is there. You know, people that have faith in something like that is an extremely strong thing.
So I love where you're going with that. You know, that's a great way of looking at it. It's almost like it's another test. It's a right. test of belief, a test of faith.
Absolutely.
You know, centuries after, you know, the man Jesus passed away, you know, perhaps this artifact was left for a reason. I like that idea. I like that perspective, Mike.
Yeah. One of the ways
I'm proud of you.
Oh, well, thank you. That doesn't happen often.
I'm proud of you all the time.
Ah.
Maybe. Not really. I'm proud of you when you slurp on your Coca-Cola bottles. Or no, that's a can.
It's a can.
What do you think about this? This is kind of a generalized... I don't want to say it's... an argument for the validity of it. But those who do believe, again, this is kind of a generalized quote. I did write this down, so I'm going to read this, though. And maybe we can dive into it a bit. Empirical analysis and scientific methods are insufficient for understanding the methods used for the image formation on this shroud. Now, the way that I interpret that, and Mike, we've said this 1,000 times on the podcast. Science ain't perfect. Who's to say that something divine in nature truly created this, and science is unable to interpret that, to decipher that, to discover that, because it's beyond what we can do in our science world as of today. Does that kind of make sense a little bit? It's beyond us. Oh,
absolutely. It's beyond all of us.
I mean, we can try and nitpick it. We can say, well, that's obviously red ochre in there because we know what red ochre is. I'm saying a very lame example. I get it. But that's within our realm of understanding, obviously. And so we're kind of picking and choosing stuff that we can kind of extrapolate, you know, and utilize as arguments against the validity, because it's in the realm of science. But perhaps it's just beyond that. Just throwing it out there.
You know what would be great?
If shut up and let you talk?
No. If we had Mr. Z joining us on this episode.
Oh, man, he'd be laughing his ass off at us right now, wouldn't he?
But wouldn't it be great to have that side?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. You know? Yeah. Absolutely would. And he is a very respectful.
Absolutely.
Respectful, and cynic.
A great guest.
And I'm saying cynic respectively, too, because he's someone who doesn't necessarily believe in, well, he doesn't believe in anything.
Well, it's science
supernatural
for him, right? And that's okay.
No, yeah, absolutely, 100%, 100%. So, Mike, just for the sake of being safe, mm-hmm. we're going to take a brief time-traveling excursion.
Okay.
I want to limit this to half-hour segments just for the purpose of uploading and exporting, since this is a new method of doing this. When we come back, we're going to really dive into this. And we're also going to dive into the Ghost Gab and Moments of the Macabre, Haphazard Horror, and all that good stuff. Macabre. But
Macabre.
Just to be on the safe side, let's take that time-traveling excursion, and then I will export this clip, and then we will return and resume this brilliant discussion. Does that sound like a plan to you?
Yeah, I guess.
He just scoffed at me. I I'm definitely putting that up on video somewhere. Mike just, he literally scoffed at me.
Did I even have the facial expression to go with it?
I didn't like it. I didn't like your facial expression.
I'm sorry.
Okay, Mike, Casper, we're going to take a break. And if you're up for it, we're going to dive into some of the arguments on both sides. Sound good?
Yes.
All right, perfect. Hold on, boys and girls. We shall be right back. 3, 2, 1. And we have returned after yet another successful time traveling excursion. Mike, let's make this briefly really clear, kind of disclaimer number two. We always say we're not experts. We don't know anything, basically.
Right, exactly.
And for the love of God, do not be offended by anything that you may interpret as a flippant comment or reaction to such. I mean, this is, to millions of people, this is a sacred artifact.
Right.
We are not tainting the potential validity of this
right.
holy relic by any means whatsoever.
And if it is a fake, it's still a very important historical piece.
Great. Great point.
You know, an great icon. Point.
Yeah, 100%. So, again, chances are if you've made it this far, you're not easily offended, and you know what we're all about. And we just, no matter what we're talking about, we try to have a good time, kind of make stuff fairly lighthearted, but by no means are we putting anything down,
right.
ever.
Right.
Mike, in case some listeners may not be familiar with the description, the physicality of the shroud, briefly we'll describe it here. It's a rectangular in shape, measuring 4x4x1x1, which is 14 feet 5 inches by 3 feet 7 inches. The cloth is woven in a 3-to-1 herringbone twill composed of flax fibrils.
Mm-hmm.
Its fibers. Most distinctive fibers. Fibrils, fibers.
Fibrosis.
Fibrosis, I hope.
No, absolutely. Anyway, go ahead.
Its most distinctive characteristic, of course, is the faint brownish image of a front and back view of a naked man with his hands folded across his groin. The two views are aligned along the midplane of the body and point in opposite directions. The front and back views of the head nearly meet at the middle of the cloth. The image in faint straw yellow color, on the crown of the cloth fibers appears to be of a man with a beard, not Mike, mustache, not Mike, and shoulder-length hair, definitely not Mike.
Definitely.
Parted in the middle.
Ooh.
The shape is muscular.
I did that in the 70s.
Did you?
I did.
Can picture that.
Feathered on the sides and parted in the middle. Anyway, go ahead.
Damn. And you were just rocking that skating
roller rink. I got slapped on the butt all the time. Anyway, go ahead.
The image of this man is muscular and tall. Well, it appears that the man is muscular and tall. Various expert measurements have him anywhere from 1.7 to 1.88 or 5'7" to 6'2" in height. Reddish-brown stains are found on the cloth, which correlate with the wounds in the biblical description of the crucifixion of Jesus. Now,
yes,
the shroud
hands,
was...
Okay.
No, go ahead, Mike.
Hands, feet, the markings from the thorn, crown of thorns.
Yeah.
The stab wound in the side from the spear, it's all on the cloth.
The shroud was damaged in the fire in 1532, unfortunately, in a chapel in Chambéry, France. There are some burn holes, Chambéry, French. There are some burn holes and scorched areas down both sides of the linen caused by contact with molten silver during the fire that burned through it in places while it was folded. 14 large triangular patches. Yes, molten silver. Ouch.
Oh, isn't that kind of significant of the,
exactly.
the silver that Judas Iscariot got?
Listen to you just pulling biblical references out of your Yahoo. That was pretty impressive.
Okay.
But no, I get you. I get you on that one 100%. Where was it? 14 large triangular patches and 8 smaller ones were sewn onto the cloth by pure clair. Pure Clare. I'm going to click on who Pure Clares are. Officially, the Order of St. Clare, originally referred to as the Order of Poor Ladies, and also known as the Clarissas or Clarissines. Interesting. The Poor Clare Nuns to repair said damage. Now, that's part of some of the arguments for the potential legitimacy of, well, I should say arguments against it being legit, is that believers say that only particular portions of the shroud have been scientifically studied, and those portions were the ones that were repaired, you know, years later. So that's, it's an interesting argument, interesting way of looking at it, for sure.
Also, you got to think of how contaminated the cloth is, you know, from other people and from way back, you know.
Oh, exactly, exactly. How many people have handled it? Yeah, I mean, there's no way of tracing the exact history of this artifact. Science does its best, but again, is science always right? In May 1898, Italian photographer Secondo Pia, I like that first name, Secondo.
Pia.
Secondo Pia was allowed to photograph the shroud.
I wonder if he's related to Padre Pio.
Padre, well, that'd be Padre Pio, so not.
People change a name a little bit. My last name has been changed over many decades.
Yeah, Charbonneau at one point.
Charbonneau, and now it's Carbonneau. There's Cars, and there's Carbinos. But totally not interesting subject matter, so edit that if you will, or not.
Nah, that's Stan.
Okay. Go ahead.
Michael Carbohydrate is a future version of your name.
I used to get called Carburetor all the time when I was a little kid.
Of course.
I hated it. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, the brief history here was not brief, but we are trying to be brief as much as we can because we got a lot to dive into here in a short amount of time. As I mentioned, no definite historical records concerning the particular shroud currently at Turin Cathedral prior to the 14th century. A burial cloth, which some historians maintain was the shroud, was owned by the Byzantine emperors, but disappeared during the sack of Constantinople.
The sack?
404. The sack.
Is that like the ending? Constantinople.
Yeah.
It got sacked?
It got sacked. That's okay. Like a British term for getting fired. I know that.
Oh, sure.
It?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. The history of the shroud from the 15th century is actually well recorded. In 1453, Margaret de Charnay deeded the shroud to the House of Savoy. We mentioned already that the shroud suffered damage in 1532. Fire damage, that is. Since the 17th century, the shroud has been displayed in the chapel built, for the particular purpose of basically just holding on to the damn shroud and making sure no one can get their filthy, dirty hands on it.
What did you call it?
Nothing. I said filthy, dirty hands. That's all I said.
But you said the damn shroud.
Oh, did I? Oh, ouch.
Shamita. Don't. You can't say that.
I didn't say, at least I didn't say GD shroud.
Great.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness.
It's not damned. It's just a controversial thing.
Well, we're doing our best to damn the quality of the podcast.
Now we're going to be insulting people.
We're troublemakers. I'm sorry.
Anyway,
the shroud has undergone several restorations, and several steps have been taken to preserve it to avoid further damage and contamination. It is kept. This is interesting. It is kept under laminated bulletproof glass in an airtight case.
Right.
The temperature and humidity controlled case is filled with argon and oxygen to prevent chemical changes. So, I'm
very
familiar
well
with
preserved.
Argon. Very well preserved. Religious views. If it seems like I'm flying through this, I am. I apologize. But we have to get to our meat of the episode, so to speak.
You already said that.
Did I? Did I really? God darn it, I'm repeating myself. Religious views, these are some quotes. The Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke state that Joseph of Arimathea wrapped the body of Jesus in a piece of linen cloth and placed it in a new tomb. Now the Gospel of John says he used strips of linen. So there's a little bit of, you know, difference there, wrapped in one piece of linen, and then another says strips of linen. So, I mean, there are different interpretations. It could be the exact same thing. Now, after the resurrection, the Gospel of John states, Simon Peter came along behind him and went straight into the tomb. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. The cloth was still lying in its place, separate from the linen. The Gospel of Luke states, Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb, bending over. He saw the strips of linen lying by themselves. So, again, plural of strips.
Right.
Interpret that as any which way you can. Now, the image itself, we described it briefly. It's kind of a miracle in itself. Believers believe it's a miracle, but it's a miracle with the uproar that it's caused. That might be kind of an interesting way of looking at it. But, again, this is important stuff. Important stuff.
It's also said that this could have been made by radiation or some force from the body, you know, imprinting this on this cloth.
During the actual resurrection, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yes. You know, when Jesus rose from the dead, that moment created this chemical image on this piece of linen, this lock, this winding sheet, Mike.
Yes.
Winding sheet. I'm sorry I like that term so much.
That's okay. You know, it means the same thing. You can use that word whatever you
want. I know.
Just don't say what you did before. Okay. Carry on.
My wayward son. Damn it. Do we ever get through an episode without doing that lame carry on my wayward son joke?
Hey, you don't have to respond to what I say.
Dang. Well, I can't help it.
Okay.
I can't help it.
Be
now, it should be pointed out that I believe in 1389, 1390, the Bishop of Troyes, Pierre Darcis, sorry, I'm butchering the name, he actually did condemn the cloth, the shroud, as a hoax. And they claim that they knew the painter. They proclaimed it was, in fact, painted. Ah, now this is interesting. Mm-hmm. This is back, you know, centuries ago. People were already arguing on the hoax side.
I've heard
now there are arguments about why the Bishop of Troyes was so adamant about claiming it as a hoax. I don't know if that's where you were going with this, Mike, but he was basically, it's been suggested that he was fearful of a religious uproar if this was, in fact, declared as authentic. But you were going to say something. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, when you were talking about the painting of it, I've read that they also say that Leonardo da Vinci may have done this painting.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding. I did not know that. I sincerely did not know that. Where'd you pull that one out of?
Just during research.
Oh, during research. Okay. I was trying to think of a snarky comment and I couldn't.
Yeah, of course.
What do you mean, of course?
Anyway,
I sound
go
like
ahead.
I'm in a garbage can, so I can be snarky, right?
It's going to have to be pressure washed after you get out of it. But
more than likely.
Anyway.
More than likely. We've kind of briefly gone over the medieval repair hypothesis. There are other hypotheses out there, the biocontamination hypothesis, the carbon monoxide hypothesis. You can guess it without us diving into the boring details of it. All of these hypotheses are arguing against the authenticity of this. They're saying there's a legit scientific reason for why this image was created, aside from it being a manipulated hoax.
Right.
Aside from it being painted on. So, I mean, there's a lot to take in. A lot to take in the short little episode of a silly podcast like the Paranormal Zone, but we're doing our best. I mentioned earlier, Mike, I mean, science can be wrong. I mean, am I wrong in stating that?
No, but, you know, in my research also, and I told you this early, that new evidence indicates Turin Shroud not a European forgery.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we're already 15 minutes in the second segment. Thank you for bringing that up because I forgot. I want to hear what you were talking about there.
Yeah. I am very interested in, I can't read all of this. Holy criminy.
So some of your research did not include taking Cliff's notes.
No. I wrote some down, but it makes no sense when I wrote it down. But anyway, it says that new scientific tests conducted on the famous Shroud of Turin have revealed that the flax used to make the linen was grown in the Middle East. The result of isotope tests provide new evidence that the shroud is the actual garment that was used to cover the body of Jesus Christ following his crucifixion and is not a forgery that was created in medieval Europe. Fragments of cloth taken from the shroud show that its flax originated in the western Levant, a swath of land occupied today by Israel, Lebanon, western parts of Jordan, and Syria.
A swath.
Is pretty interesting. There's a
now is there I think it's important,
yes,
that you credit where you found that info from.
Oh, it's from the Catholic Herald.
The Catholic Herald.
Yes. So
you, I'm just suggesting that wouldn't you think that they would try and find whatever they could to support
sure
the authenticity of this?
They do not support it now as authentic.
Mm-hmm.
But they do say it's a very important historical piece.
Sure.
They treat it like it's an actual real, you know, relic.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, the threads originated from a sample known as a Reyes piece that was removed from their shroud in 1973 for textile research. 14 threads were provided by the Turin Archdiocese to the physicist Ray Rogers. So it's, you know, done by scientific, you know, means.
People much smarter than you and I.
Oh, absolutely. He's a member of the American scientific team that had conducted an on-site study of the shroud in 1978, and which was later passed on to Stera, whatever that is. Testing was undertaken at the Stable Isotopes Laboratory of the University of Hong Kong, which is able to test very small samples of even less than 1 milligram. Meacham said the Eastern Europe origin of the shroud is important because it reinforces other features that point in that direction. Most notable, the pollen, even though many identifications have since been discounted, certain species taken together still indicate an Eastern Mediterranean presence. Mm-hmm. Similarly, the crown of thorns on the shroud in helmet style rather than Roman circlet is a feature characteristic of Asia Minor and the Levant.
The imagery of the crown itself is strengthening the argument of its authenticity.
And also, another is a claim of coins on the eyes in the shroud image that matched a documented instance from a secondary century burial in Judea.
Ooh, easy for you to say.
Yeah. So
Mike, actually, it should be told that Mike just fell over. That's why he was stumbling there. You're back on your chair now. Okay.
Yeah. I'm glad I did it quietly.
Yeah, you did. It was actually impressive. Ugh. He fell and he did a complete somersault, and then
he landed on my head.
Yeah, and he's back like nothing happened. It's impressive.
Yeah, but in the end,
Your Scully protected you, by the way.
My Scally.
Scally. I keep saying Scully.
But they say in the end they were unable to explain what had caused the image, leaving a mystery that persists today. But their final report asserted that it had come from a human body. So this is scientifically tested on fibers taken from the shroud, and that's what they came up with. And reported by the Catholic Herald.
The Catholic Herald.
Which is very interesting in itself.
I like that. Thank you for sharing that. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I do remember reading other. It wasn't from the Catholic Herald. I found it some other place. I think it was like the a website of biblical archaeology, basically, mm-hmm. we're talking scientists who are arguing for the scientific legitimacy of biblical artifacts, biblical mm-hmm. art, you know, archaeology, and of course the Shroud of Turin is a hugely important item of study
it's important and fantastic that, sorry to cut over you, but that science is testing this for possible legitimacy. I mean, that's important as well.
Well, they have to. I mean, they wouldn't to. Be exactly. doing this job. Science exactly. Scientists would not be doing their job.
Exactly.
Now, Mike, I did write down this quote from one of your favorite people in the world, Mr. Joe Nickel.
Let me prepare for this. Oof, Duffina. Okay, go ahead.
You know, he fell over other way now. I can feel
my body getting just kind of heated up already.
I mean, it's nothing terrible. He's said far worse, you know, and God bless him. He has every right to
oh, absolutely, be, but he doesn't the, need to be a jerk about it. That's
to be the snarky cynic that yes. he is.
Anyway.
Well, this is in response to one scientific study on behalf of the authenticity of the Shroud of Turin. Now, he is basically, I'm not going to share names here, but he is referring to the scientist who argued for the authenticity.
Okay.
And he's Joe Nickel just totally basically dismisses all of this scientist's research, all of his data, his whole argument with this quote. He simply stated,
I'm listening.
He said that this man started, quoting now, started with a desired conclusion and simply worked backwards towards the evidence. So you kind of understand what I'm saying there. Again, not the worst by any means.
No, but I've heard worse from him, yeah.
But you get what he's saying. He's like, right. This scientist already had a pre-vision, I don't mm-hmm. know if that's a word or not. He had this desired outcome, and then he nitpicked, worked backwards to come
make it
towards,
factual. Yes.
Exactly. Dismissing, you know, however many hundreds of hours of research that this scientist conducted. But
well, that's his opinion. You know, has he done research? Has he followed exactly
what
they've done?
But you have to understand, though, Joe Nickel is right.
Yeah,
right?
I know, but I can't say that. Now I've got his face imprinted in my mind.
I know. I'm sorry.
But anyway, no, it's okay.
So who bothered you more? R.I.P. to the great Randy or the amazing Randy or Joe Nickel?
Oh, boy. I could listen to James Randi. I could listen to him.
Yeah.
You know, he's not so snide. But Joe Nickel, yeah, it's tough. Oh, but I do remember seeing something I want to mention. There is also $1 million offer to have the shroud proven by science. And what they did is they have they supplied the cloth to each scientist that was going to do this, and they in a set up laboratory with everything they need for testing, and if whichever one can prove the authenticity of the shroud gets $1 million.
Dang, I didn't realize that there was like a kind of a game show contest going on about
yeah.
out there.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty important, though. I mean, if you're going to pay $1 million for anything, why not? You know, if you're interested in reality and science cohesively working together, you know,
right.
even if it is something that you don't believe in, you know, I've often wondered, like, what would snarky cynics do if science someday proved to them what they have never believed in?
It wouldn't work, I don't think.
I was wondering that. Do you think that would they argue against science then?
Well, they already Joe Nickel already. Well, no, he was correct in what he said. But I don't know. I think science or naysayers or the Phil Nichols of the world, They have their own.
Who's Phil Nickel?
Well, his brother.
Joe. Okay.
I know. Yeah.
he's much shorter. You're trying to erase him from. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. He's a little heavy in the midsection. But
you're trying You're trying to erase the Joe Nickel visage or vision in from your head. So you gave him the name Phil. I get it.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. I don't know where Phil came out of my head. I have no idea.
Like it though. I like it. But, it sounds cool.
But yeah, I feel that they would come up still with their own ideas of why that's not correct.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you, Mike. You know, oh my gosh, we have done a poor job of diving into what we wanted to, but again, we're on kind of a time limit here. Definitely something that we can come back to. Mike, I would love to do a Patreon deep dive into Shrouded Turin.
Absolutely.
Kind of like a part two of this as a Patreon exclusive.
A deeper dive.
I like that idea. Part two on Patreon.
Absolutely, because there's so much more that we can talk about.
Well, I'm just flying through this list. There's so much stuff we need to get into. I mean, you know, arguments for and against, you know, the tests for pigments, the radiocarbon dating tests, the supposed bloodstains. Mike kind of talked about the flowers and the pollen, the anatomical forensics. Oh my gosh, image analysis.
I have also read that that they have tested and actually have gotten the blood type out of a sample.
No kidding. I was not aware of that.
Which was AB, which I think is a very rare blood type, I believe. But, you know, is that real? Is that factual?
Right.
I don't know. Where did that information come from? I don't know. So
some of these fringe theories, some people claim that they've detected images of flowers and coins and even writing.
Mm-hmm.
An interesting theory about the radiation process. We kind of tapped into that a little bit. The dust transfer technique. Now that's medieval photography we talked about already. But again, Mike, we need to dive into all of this stuff as much as we can on part two for Patreon exclusive. Let's do that. You think we'd be able to do that this weekend? Maybe.
Yes. Absolutely.
Let's keep that as an open mind. But Mike, we need to dive into. We need to dive into some ghost gab and some haphazard horror before we run out of time.
Haphazard horror.
Haphazard horror moments of the macabre.
I can't wait for that. Macabre.
Macabre.
Macabre, no. It fits.
You know, hey, maybe that's a title for your future book. Moments of Macabre, no.
There you go.
Maybe.
I could write a book.
I know you could. Sorry, I got the itchy throat. Well, Mike, briefly for our Ghost Gab segment here, talk to us what your lovely wife, Mary, may have encountered not that long ago. And if you feel inclined, maybe give a brief history behind said encounter.
And actually, yesterday, there they go.
Yep. They've been so good. So good. But now Mike is doing his usual pile, driving his dogs viciously, ferociously, threatening to de-hair them. No, he's not. I'm kidding everybody.
Okay, I think she's good now. Where was I?
You didn't even start. So,
what was your question?
talk about what Mary may have encountered.
Yes, that's right. Yes, I was going to say that actually yesterday I had an interesting little thing that was.
Wait a minute. Cool. No kidding. Sweet.
It was weird, but.
Well, let's talk about both.
Okay. Well, the other day, Mary saw our ghost cat that resides in our home. It's been seen in the kitchen mostly. When you're sitting on the couch in the living room, you can see in the kitchen and you can see this brown, blurry, fuzzy with a big bushy tail just kind of walk from one wall towards a stove. And she saw that the other day, but it was in the dining room, and we saw it from the kitchen. Or she saw it from the kitchen.
Really?
So, you know, like when we're in the living room, it's in the kitchen. Well, maybe when we're in the kitchen, it moves out to the dining room, which would mean it's not a residual.
No, I was just going to say that it's like kind of interacting, almost like playfully hiding from you, maybe.
Yeah, could be.
Do you get the vibe of hiding or just or the total,
no,
the total opposite?
Just, you know, when I have seen it, it's just a cat doing its thing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So that was very interesting.
So was I know Mary is kind of sensitive when it comes to all the paranormal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Was she kind of meh about it? You know, meh,
no,
as the kids go? Or was she kind of, she wasn't frightened by it by any means, was she?
No,
or?
No, not at all. It was an interesting thing. And she said, oh, I think I just saw the ghost cat. So I wish I was looking at the same time so I could corroborate that, but...
And you know what? I mean, how many years ago was it, Mike, when we were recording and I swore I saw something in the, you know, at your feet for a moment.
Right.
I was like, Mike, I think I just saw it. It was in the reflection of the mirror that was behind you.
Right.
Do you remember this?
I do, yeah.
But then, of course, you got flustered and mad at me because the next morning I was trying to talk myself out of.
Yeah. Well, like you always do. That's your thing.
Is it
you could
thing?
Be you could be punched in the forehead by Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And you would no.
Well, he wouldn't be that. Just, no. Well, he wouldn't be that friendly then. It'd be Casper the prick.
Casper the Unfriendly Ghost.
Casper the Unfriendly Ghost
makes a
yeah.
great cartoon series. He's just a jerk.
Just a jerk.
Anyway.
Now, what happened with you yesterday? You said something interesting.
Yes, I was in the kitchen. I got this counter that I usually do all my prep work for whatever I'm cooking or we're baking or whatever. And I got this little nightlight that I put on the... It's on the wall just right in front of where you stand. It wasn't plugged in at the time. It was laying down on the counter, this little nightlight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I had my back to it. I didn't see it, but the thing moved and made a noise like somebody picked it up and dropped it.
No kidding.
No kidding. It was very interesting. You know, it was no dog thing. It was just, you know, and I tested it out. I thought, okay, this wasn't plugged in, I don't think. So I went up to the plug-in because it's up higher on the wall. And I dropped it, like if it fell out. And it was a totally different sound. And if it was plugged in, you know, I mean, it plugs in tight. It's not going to fall out.
Sorry, I'm coughing over you, Mike.
So, but I wish I didn't have my back towards it so I could have seen it. But, boy, I heard it. It sounded like it hit, kind of bounced and hit again. So
that is, I love stuff like that though.
Yeah.
Because again, it's just, it seems like it's kind of minute, but it's still, that's
yeah.
potentially paranormal right there.
Yeah. It's another one of those things where I go, oh, that was cool, you know, and just
yeah.
store it away in my head, you know.
And you go about your merry way.
Yes.
I apologize for coughing, everybody. I've been doing pretty good this whole recording.
You're doing good.
But I've been ill, and I hope these coughs aren't blasting everyone's eardrums out. But, you know, there's no – that's a terrible feeling, Mike, is when you're in a library or, like, you're in a classroom, like my job. You know, you're sitting there, and you're trying to be quiet, and you have to flippin' cough. Don't like it. Don't like. But, yeah, that's something that you have to deal with. Mike is, like, frozen in pure – I don't know what the hell he's doing right now. He's looking at me in an odd, funny way. I think it's time for a time-traveling excursion before we return. Hold on, boys and girls. We shall be right back. All right, and we are back after a not-so-successful time-traveling excursion. Man, some funky stuff went wrong there, but Mike, we're going to bit this episode together Frankenstein style. I'll figure out how to put all these things together somehow, and we'll get the, knock on wood, we'll get stuff published
right.
tonight. But you said before everything started going to hell for us that actually something odd and ghostly happened again today.
Yes.
Please elaborate.
Well, a lot of times when I'm sitting on the couch and Mary wants to relax, I'll put a pillow on my lap and she'll lay her head on my lap and lay on the couch. You know, it's kind of a nice thing. But she was laying there and she felt like a finger touch her cheek and push in her cheek, and that was it.
What?
Yeah, that happened today, and I didn't even think of that until she reminded me. But yeah, so she was touched.
She was touched, physically touched, so much so that like she felt like her cheek like kind of sank in a little bit.
Yeah, it was like a finger. Yeah,
really. And it wasn't you, obviously. You weren't doing anything.
No. And I was, you know, I'm right there. There was nothing. She was just laying there and.
Now, would it have been on your, would it have been on your sling side, or would she be laying on your quote unquote good side, your good shoulder?
My good side.
Okay. Gotcha. But it was not you. It was not your good.
Absolutely
side.
Not me. And there was nothing else there. The dogs weren't even close by or nothing. They were sleeping on the floor.
That's interesting.
So.
Well, yes. before we wrap it up with I love hearing stuff like that. By the way, before we wrap it up with our moments of the macabre, yeah, that's a bad habit I'm getting into. I have that quick question about Debbie, or not necessarily about her, but I made a trip to Bemidji a week or so ago, and then on the way back, I just felt moved to find her final resting spot again, and I did. Pulled into her cemetery there. Well, not her cemetery, but you know what I am saying. And I put on the digital recorder. I did a little 15-minute session there. And I just wanted to have your honest reaction, Mike, when I ask you, why do I do stuff like that? I mean, help me out here. I mean, that's it. Because I was thinking about that, because I have said it how many times, and you agree with me. It's like we don't sit here and go, well, all cemeteries are haunted, and the ghosts of the dead hang out in the cemeteries. I mean, we think it's almost the exact opposite a lot of times, but yet we still return to cemeteries. Why?
You're always so desperate for an investigation. It's like you'll do anything, you know.
I like the usage.
Probably start recording.
I like that you use the word desperate.
Yeah. Well, you know.
But you know, when we're not desperate, though, like when I go and visit you, we more often than not, we'll go to like the Enderlin Cemetery, or we'll go on back road cruises trying to find old abandoned creepy cemeteries. Not abandoned, but you know what I mean.
Right.
You know, not very frequently visited, out of the way cemeteries. Well, and do we think spiritual activity can happen there? Of course we do.
Yeah.
But we don't think that the spirits of those who are buried there, that's where they are. We don't believe that.
Right. Well, like the cemetery that we went to when we went on that where was that? That dirt road that we drove on that was supposed to have some activity and stuff like that. Yeah. I can't remember what it's called. But that little cemetery there, I mean, we got some great stuff
several,
there.
Several. Yeah. Several like places.
We're by that woman's grave, and we're asking if, you know, if they know who we are or whatever. We got our names. You got your name said.
Oh, you're talking about the Stram Cemetery? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's back when we, I'm drawing a blank on what that's called now. Virgus. Virgus.
Virgus
Trails.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. And also, you know, when we're driving around after we were hanging out in that awesome old abandoned barn, you know, we kind of.
Yeah.
Darn near killed ourselves making the trek to that place.
Yeah.
You know, but then there's that church where a car accident had occurred right next to the...
The car flipped off the road and ended up in the cemetery.
Yeah.
Killed the guy.
So, I mean, I get it why we make visits to particular places like that, you know, but did I go to Debbie's final resting spot thinking I was going to hear from Debbie? No, I didn't think that at all, but yet I still did a little 15-minute... you know, recording segment. I don't know. It's intriguing when I sit there and I try and psychoanalyze myself. I'm like, why am I doing this? You know, well, but you never know, right? You never know.
Exactly. Well, like I said, we've gotten results from cemeteries, and I bet almost every investigative team out there will go to a cemetery.
Yeah,
it's just 100%. Part of the. I mean, it's like, you know, we're close to the dead physically. the physical part of the dead. And it's, I don't know, maybe that gets in our psyche and it's like, you know, it makes you think more about it, but
makes I don't you think know. More. I mean, it's always intriguing. It's the environment. I think it's kind of, it's stimulating in a way, not to right. sound, you know, disrespectful, but it's like, ooh, perhaps something can happen. That, you know, there's any number of explanations, but
right. Exactly.
Well, Mike, before anything else goes wrong, knock on wood, let's wrap up the episode here with some haphazard horror. Yeah, we're talking about moments of the macabre.
We need music for that. We need opening music for that.
Oh, we absolutely do. I am not attempting that right now.
No, that's not going to work. Nope.
Just a few short, these are true stories. And again, some of these are just absolutely awful. Hence, the macabre. Haphazard horror. The first little incident I want to share is...
Is it going to make me feel nauseated or sick or
no,
is it like that bad or am I going to throw up or anything? Or,
no, I think you'll be fine.
They're really bad.
Yeah, I think you'll be fine. This first one involves an accident on an oil rig.
Ooh,
specifically the...
Okay, go ahead.
Specifically the decompression chamber. Yeah, you can probably figure out stuff already. This...
Wow.
This is from Ranker.com, by the way. Macabre moments from history. One of the worst saturation diving accidents in history occurred on the Byford Dolphin drilling rig in a decompression chamber.
Mm.
During this accident, a dive tender and four deep sea divers lost their lives. Just a little history or little info here. Saturation divers live underwater for several days to several weeks.
Crazy.
They live in special pressurized tubes after they are lowered to the correct depth in a diving bell. Mike thinks pressurized tubes is funny.
No, so I'm just thinking that it's a crazy thing to do.
Oh, man.
What if you're, well, you couldn't do it if you're claustrophobic in any way.
Oh, hell no.
You know, I've had CAT scans and MRIs and
just, no, thank you.
I got to be sedated. They give me a pill, and I'm relaxed and listening to music that they put on and trying not to freak out. But anyway,
now,
go ahead.
Imagine being in an MRI machine underwater, you know, thousands of feet.
Nope.
The diving bell or the pressurized tubes allow the divers to complete long jobs deep underwater without having to decompress to return to the surface every day and risk illnesses such as the bends.
Right.
The bends. They only have to decompress once after the job is done. Sadly, this unfortunate instance, which occurred in 1983, again involving four divers and a diver tender, all four perished when a faulty airlock caused a dramatic change in pressure.
Mm.
The instant pressure shift caused the five men's blood to reach its boiling point
right.
within seconds, so much so causing one man to be torn apart.
Yeah, kind of exploded, I suppose. He became fish food, and I mean that with all respect. I'm sorry. My God. Patrick's got his hand on his face here.
This poor soul, and yeah. Mike just referred to him as fish food.
Well,
it's true. I mean, no, there's, you know, if anything, hopefully he did become fish food because then, in some weird way, he lived on.
Right. So were they recovered?
But well, yes, definitely, yes. Bodies recovered, and I mean,
bodies in pieces.
Bodies and yes. Again, these are short and brief because I don't want to dive into...
No pun intended.
Oh, my God. What a horrible pun.
Oh, yeah. See?
See what you've done to me?
Okay. Story number two.
this one's just sad. It makes you want to just strangle the people who did this.
And retch a little bit.
And retch a little bit. Now, in the 1940s... 1940... Yeah. Are you done? Are you okay?
I thought I'd get that out right away. Go ahead.
In the 1940s and 50s, the Canadian government, Mike's hometown, no, not really, but
yeah,
Mike likes Canada,
I love it, yes.
the Canadian government received federal subsidies for the building of hospitals and orphanages.
Mm-hmm.
But the subsidies for hospitals were significantly higher than those for orphanages. Under the leadership of Maurice Duplessis, the premier of Quebec in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, many healthied, orphaned children were deliberately misdiagnosed as mentally incompetent. 20,000 orphans were misdiagnosed and placed in mental institutions by the Canadian government during these decades.
Those Quebecois.
Their diagnoses led them to being sent to psychiatric hospitals and were confined, where they were abused and treated inhumanely. Now, why such a thing happened? Well, you guessed it. Their cruel and unjust confinement allowed the Canadian government and the Catholic Church to gain significant funds through those federal subsidies.
I see. What did it, does it say when this happened?
Yes, several times I said the 1940s and 50s.
That's right. Well, you know, how I...
20,000, roughly.
Yes.
Purposefully.
Yeah, they knew what they were doing.
Sent to mental institutions just for the almighty dollar, my friend.
And they knew it was going to happen. You know, at 20,000, how many of those children survived or died? I mean, it's unbelievable.
This isn't necessarily a story. It's kind of a... kind of a theory, maybe a hypothesis.
Okay.
But think about this. I love Duluth. I love Lake Superior, as do you.
I do too. I love it, love it, love it, love it.
Do you believe that the bodies of hundreds and hundreds of lost souls who have perished during the sinking of ships on the treacherous waters of the deepest freshwater, largest freshwater lake in the world?
The Edmund Fitzgerald.
One prime example. I believe bodies were discovered in the Edmund Fitzgerald, but this suggestion here states that perhaps thousands, minimum of hundreds of bodies have been preserved by the icy depths of the cold Lake Superior. I love Lake Superior. Mike, do you think that it is still housing corpses? Not just skeletons. We're talking fleshy remains.
Yeah, but then the fish, you know.
The fish could have devoured most, if not all. I get it.
I don't know,
like that thought.
I don't either. You know,
it's realistic, though. You know, it's more than likely true.
I believe that. I really do.
Oh my goodness.
I still love Lake Superior and Duluth.
Yeah, that's not going to change.
No.
I get that. I don't know. Oh, we can talk about the pizza delivery man who had a bomb strapped to his neck. That's a great story.
To his neck.
Yeah.
Did it explode? Read the story.
You want me to read that one? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
This will be the last one for the evening.
Okay. Got it.
I need to go and feed my family.
Yes, I need to feed myself.
On August 28, 2003, Brian Wells walked into a PNC bank and handed over a note requesting $250,000. He then
showered her with hugs and kisses.
Oh, man. He showed the teller that he had a bomb strapped to his neck and that it would detonate in 15 minutes. The bank could not give him the requested amount, which led to him leaving the bank with less than $9,000. However, shortly after leaving the bank, Wells was apprehended by the police and made to sit in the road. He professed his innocence, of course, and begged the police to remove the bomb from his neck. Unfortunately, minutes before the bomb squad arrived, the neck bomb collar bomb detonated, ending Wells' life. Yet, I mean, that's tragic enough, but the guy, hey, kind of did it to himself, didn't he? What confuses authorities was the note they found that directed Wells on an elaborate scavenger hunt that was supposed to occur after the heist. This scavenger hunt was meant to lead him to someone who could disarm the bomb. Later, a pizza delivery man who worked with Wells was found dead under mysterious circumstances, further perplexing police. 3 weeks later, a local man made a phone call to police stating that he had a body in his freezer, which was only steps away from where Wells had made his last pizza delivery. For months, police and investigators struggled to identify how all the pieces fit and what the plan was behind the heist. Eventually, it was determined that Marjorie D.L. Armstrong and Kenneth Barnes, along with Wells and several other co-conspirators, hatched the plan for monetary gain, and basically all of them were idiots and ended up dead. End of story.
Good Lord.
He had notes attached to his... He was supposed to be rescued by other cohorts in this heist. After he was... He did this to himself, believing he was going to be rescued by his brilliant co-heisters.
That are idiots. Well, that's part of the dark world that we live in.
My God. I wish I would have been a fly on the wall during that brilliant sit-down meeting between these people and say, you know what, we need some money. Who's got a bomb?
Yeah.
We'll figure something out.
Who will let us strap it to your neck?
Right? God. Did they draw straws? I mean, how'd they do that? Did he willingly volunteer with no guarantee that their idiot buddy would be able to safely remove his bomb collar?
They probably came up with this plan while drinking and smoking some extreme weed.
I'm envisioning moonshine for some reason.
Moonshine? Yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious. Well, Mike, we forged through and we made it. Well, not yet. I gotta conjure up, cobble together this episode. And
yeah,
my plan is to get it published and released tonight so our starving listeners will finally get their dose of the Paranormal Zone.
Yeah.
Again, we're going to do... We're going to do a deep dive for Patreon episodes, deep dive into the Shroud of Turin as well. So don't miss that. And we're going to be recording more and more exclusive episodes starting April. Looking forward to it, my friend. Well, Mike, thanks very much for making this work. We somehow did it.
We did.
Awesome. Well, without any further ado, what do our awesome paranormal pals need to do?
Peace out. Choo.